Pride of Detroit PODcast. I'm back. Welcome back, me. I'm Chris Perfett, the adequate host at Chris Perfett, P-E-R-F-E-T-T. I'm back. As I said, if you've been listening to the PODcast last few weeks, you would find out that I wasn't here. What happened? Did Jeremy, the fearless leader, Jeremy Reisman at Detroit Online, did he finally realize that this adequate host was just getting so much flack from the fans out there for saying things like the Lions would go 7-9 or that getting rid of Eric Ebron was a massive disaster? Did Jeremy finally kowtow to the braying mob? No, he did not. He just, why was I gone, Jeremy?
I fired you.
For 2 weeks.
For three weeks. And now I'm so damn tired that I'm like, all right, you can come back.
It is, as you say, it is the triumphant return of Chris Perfett, which is now the thing you say every time I've posted an article lately.
you and Jerry, anytime they post something, it's your triumphant return.
That's him negging me. That's him negging me and Jeremy to basically say, write more for the website. So, you know, we see where his loyalties lies, even though he's tired. Jeremy, back from Detroit. How are you? How was it?
It was a blast, man. It was nice meeting half the staff that I hadn't met before. And, you know, it's okay to see Ryan and Reno and Mike again. They're all right.
Okay. Yeah, we had. Well, first off, let's get that other muttering voice in here. Nice for you to take a break from Fortnite. Ryan Matthews. Back is the motherfucking rock guy. At Ryan underscore POD. How are you doing, Ryan, after a weekend of debauchery?
I think my weekend with the draft can be summed up in a picture that Jeremy took of me without my permission during the sixth round.
Was the mozzarella sticks one?
Nope. It was the one we were in the conference room. The Lions didn't have a sixth round pick. So originally Alex had taken like five conference chairs and just lined them up to form a makeshift bed. And I ended up using them instead.
Speaking of which, you spent most of the weekend wanting to kill Alex. If the Slack is to be believed.
Let's get Jeremy back in here because he was live in the conference room when we were having our fun. It was all in good fun.
We're a loving family, and that's why we're like fighting brothers, you know?
Yeah, it's that Midwest love where the best way to tell someone that you love them is to tell them that you are going to bleep and kill them.
The brothers I never had.
Mm-hmm.
It's just called two brothers.
Two brothers.
Two brothers. So if you did not watch Facebook Live over the weekend, shame on you, because those guys had a lot of fun. I kept wanting to like call in, but just, you know, whatever. We need to get you guys more mics next time. I was watching and I was absolutely nitpicking you guys the entire time, but hey, it's whatever. You guys did good.
Yeah, we'll probably do another war room next year. It seems like a really fun concept. We didn't get a ton of feedback, positive or negative, but it was fun enough for us to just kind of have a complete war room the entire first round, the entire second round, entire third round. Just shooting the shit.
We've been talking about maybe doing a live PODcast episode. If we could do it for the draft, I think that'd be even better.
Right.
Like, just combine both those things. But I think that's a good way to jump off there. This is the leaner POD cast. I'm trying to keep folks interested. So let's jump off from talking about the war room right into the draft, which is why we're here. The draft happened. The Lions drafted. Everyone drafted. A bunch of people are drafting. And now today the fallout happens and everyone's demanding everyone show them their receipts to let them know if they are a good drafter or not, or a good draft prognosticator or not. And I don't know. I don't know if you are. I can't tell you if you're a real boy. Person at home who makes his own mock drafts. But we can tell you is how the Lions did. And I think the way we're going to do this is we were originally thinking about going round by round, but I think since this podcast is going to be coming out on Tuesday, I want to take kind of a more eagle eye look on the draft. Let's start on the offense because I think, Jeremy, this was the focus of the Detroit Lions in this draft. They're a number one priority. Because, like, I don't want to go through this and decide if the Lions adhered to whether or not you think they had a good draft. I just want to, like, they clearly went into this with a strategy in mind. I think it's fascinating to see what that strategy is, which is, yes, everyone outside has been saying the defense, but Bob Quinn and Matt Patricia had in mind this idea to overhaul the offensive line and overhaul the run game and try to really make this offense dynamic and something that can compete in the NFC North.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's no doubt about it. It's impossible to look at this draft and not go, wow, Bob Quinn really, 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 really wanted to fix the running game. And he did it with the first two picks, and then he did it with the last two picks, really. You know, grabbing center Frank Ragnow was a move that I think a lot of people questioned at first because he wasn't the top of their interior offensive line rankings. But I think if you look around, he was a pick that the Bengals were likely going to make. He's a pick that the Vikings were rumored to want to make. He's a pick that the Patriots were rumored to want to make. So I think just overall, it's a bit surprising how hard they went in on the running game, because I still think this is a team that lives and dies with Matthew Stafford, but it's clear Bob Quinn wants to take a lot off his shoulders.
Well, I think the the guard center that Ragnow can play, and we'll get into whether he's going to play left guard or center throughout the offseason here, but I think that definitely helps both. Sure. You did mention a lot of people were kind of clinging to it, but I will say from Pro Football Focus, as Brett Whitefield, our friend, says, the godfather, Neil Hornsby, says his three favorite picks of the first round relative to position drafted: Derwin James, safety with the Chargers; Lamar Jackson, quarterback with the Ravens; and then Frank Ragnow, center with the Lions. So, I mean, that's high praise there.
Yeah, I'm in terms of, like, I think the initial criticism of that pick is that it was a reach and that he wasn't the best guy on the board. But I think as soon as everyone kind of did a little deeper dive on the guy, they're like, ooh, I don't know how this guy slipped through the cracks. Obviously, there's some injury concerns because, you know, his 2017 season ended with ankle surgery. But
can I be honest about that? Can I
go for it?
Everyone in college is getting surgery now, so it's not a big deal. Everyone's coming out of college injured in some way because football still hurts, and it's hurting in college because kids are hitting harder in college, and the gateway to injury to surgery is a lot lower now. A lot more people can get surgery rather than just hobbling around on it for years to come.
Yeah.
That's my take on it, though.
I mean, and if you look at the kind of surgery that he had, it's not something that that was expected to keep him out long term. It's not something that's expected to linger. The only question that really remains is just how he responds to it when he's out there. Is he going to overcompensate? He hasn't played a game since he's had the surgery, so if there's any concern about the injury at all, it's mental. It's how you respond mentally after coming out for the first time and you know, hitting a blocking shed, any sort of that things. But to me, this is that was my favorite pick of the whole draft is Frank Ragnow, just because, like you said, not only is he going to help the running game, but he's that final piece in the offensive line to help pass protection as well.
So what do you think, Ryan, of the Ragnow pick? Because obviously I think there's going to be questions on whether he or Glasgow is going to take the center position. And I mean, you know me, I like the centers. I like centers. I like good centers, but that kind of interior side has been a bit of a question mark right until this draft.
Yeah, it has. I mean, it's been a huge question mark. And I think we talked about that an awful lot on the podcast leading up to the draft, is that the Lions had legitimate holes at certain positions. And one of them was on the interior line, whether or not they're going to, you know, whether or not they're going to pencil in Glasgow at center or guard. They definitely had a hole there. And I think what ends up happening by taking Ragnow, like Jeremy said, initially a lot of people react with either some form of disdain because it's not the guy that they wanted, or because they, well, you know, I guess we have the benefit now of hindsight and being able to see everything that ended up playing its way out. But the Lions clearly had an overarching plan in place, and Ragnow is one of the first pieces in that plan. And that plan is clearly that the Lions want to run the football this year. Like, let's not get anything else twisted about this draft. If there was anything that the Lions sought to accomplish with this draft, number one, first and foremost, it was that they are making a conscious and very deliberate effort to run the football. And that's the precedent that Frank Ragnow, drafting him 20th overall in the draft, that's what that sets.
And I believe one of you guys pointed out too, like, this is the way the Patriots, you know, we talk about the Patriot way all the time. The Lions are being the Patriots junior. It's always been about a strong offensive line to start the mix. And, but you mentioning the run game kind of dovetails us nicely into day two. And the second pick, which was honestly my favorite pick of the entire draft, was Kerryon Johnson, who I was shocked to even see there that late in the second round.
Well, this is, I think this is where the arguments start, because I thought day two was my least favorite day of the draft. I talked with Reno before on Friday morning, just talking about, you know, what could potentially happen. Could the Lions potentially trade up? And I said, as I've said this entire time, I'm not a fan of trading up in the draft. I think it's bad business. As I mean, that's essentially what Bob Quinn said too, you know, getting good picks is good business. Trading away picks, therefore, bad business. So going up to get Kerryon Johnson, who, mind you, was my favorite running back in the draft in terms of fit and value. I was hoping you could get him in the third. Obviously, that wasn't ever going to happen. But I just think moving up to get a guy is and I said it to Reno right before, like, I'd be okay with the trade up. I'd be less okay with the trade up for a running back, because I just didn't view it as strong of a need as apparently the Lions did. I mean, it's very clear now that the Lions thought the entire running game, from offensive line to offensive line coach to running backs, all needed a major overhaul. I thought the Lions could get by with the change in the offensive line coach and, you know, getting that last piece on the offensive line, giving Amir Abdullah one more year to try it out, and maybe getting someone next year. But I understand if they find a guy they like, they go and get him. But to me, I thought the Lions could afford another tryout year under a new scheme with a new offensive line, with a healthy offensive line, hopefully. And then if it doesn't work, you go next way. If the board were to fall in their favor and Kerryon Johnson would have been there at 50-51, I would have been a lot more in favor of it. But I thought the Lions didn't have as big of a need at running back, where they had to get desperate. They had to trade away a fourth-round pick to get Kerryon.
Maybe it's me. So, you know that, unlike you guys, like, I mean, you guys are big Big Ten football guys. The fact that this draft was nearly all like SEC guys for the first 2.5 days made me all really warm and fuzzy inside. Plus the Sunbelt guy in there, but we'll get to him later, because apparently no one watches Sunbelt football, you goddamn proles. But I liked Kerryon Johnson a lot. And I think this pick tells you that, you know, unlike your plan, Jeremy, though, that this staff clearly has no interest in Amir Abdullah for any future here. Like, Amir Abdullah is going to have to ball out of his mind to probably make it through the next couple of years, if even through cuts for the fall. Right. Like, it's signaling to me that they have unless they cut Theo Riddick, it could be the possibility. Both Amir Abdullah and Theo Riddick are good pass-catching running backs, but it's clearly that they came in, looked at what Amir Abdullah has accomplished so far, and decided, no, this is not going to be our three-down running back.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what else to say. I think Bob Quinn probably said it very clearly. His Saturday night press conference was very telling to me. Because he not only was he very open about the defense, which we'll get to a little bit later, but he was very open about how frustrated he was with that running game last year. I'll direct quote him from here. He says, quote, "So I think when I look back at our team last year, all those critical situations, like it's goal line, like we can't run the ball half a yard, that bothered me. So I took it upon myself to implement some changes in terms of what we do, what we want to look like as a team. And, you know, when Matt came in, I said, listen, this is what I think we need to do. And he was on board. So that's kind of what our plan has been since February 5th, whatever day that was. So as soon as Matt Patricia was on board, he's like, all right, we are hammering this running game. We are getting it figured out. And it's honestly a little bit surprising to me, because I do think the running back needed a drastic improvement, but it doesn't need to be this team's identity. And I don't know if it will be the team's identity. It probably still won't, but they put in a hell of a lot of resources this offseason for it not to be, at least, you know, carrying the ball probably close to 30 times a game now.
I think that's fine, though, to take that pressure off of Matt Stafford. Ryan, you're probably actually, you know what? Suddenly it just hit me why you might not like Kerryon Johnson enough. Is this because he's a PUBG guy and not a Fortnite guy?
No, man.
I'm not.
I'm a fan of the player, not the move to get him.
Brian, go ahead. What you got?
I you know what? I'm not going to let my own selfish personal interest get in the way of whether or not I can get behind a pick or not. I like Kerryon Johnson. He was a guy that I even mocked to the Lions in one of my mock drafts, which I mean should forever fade into the background. Mock drafts suck. And I always realize this. I always realize this 2 days after the draft, where I'm like, why did I spend like 9 hours doing that? But anyways, so I like the Kerryon Johnson pick. I'm a little bit on board with Jeremy, but here's the thing. It comes back to that idea that I was mentioning when I was talking about Ragnow, one of the best run blocking interior offensive linemen in college football last year. The Lions wanted to run the football. And if it meant giving up a fourth round pick in this year's draft to move up and get the guy that they truly wanted and that other teams wanted, because they clearly valued Kerryon Johnson at the point at which he was deemed valuable. Because in the first round, you had a guy like Rashad Penny go off the board. You had another guy in Sony Michel taken by the Patriots, which is a very unlike Patriots thing to do, to draft a running back in the first round. I think it's always hard to decide, you know, certain teams or certain GMs, certain organizations, they value certain positions at certain times in the draft. I don't think that's the case. I think that they have their board. They have their guys that they like. If they feel like the value is right, if they feel like that guy won't be available by the next time they pick, that they're going to take that guy. And I think that's what happened with Bob Quinn. I think that they're big fans of Kerryon Johnson. They realized that they had to move up in front of Washington in order to get him, because I think that Washington was going to take him. Instead, Washington, you know, they move back immediately after the Lions make that pick, and, you know, they settle on Darius Geis. This is going to be one of those cases. I feel like this happens almost every year, but going back to last year with Jared Davis and Reuben Foster, like, Kerryon Johnson and Darius Geis are going to forever be linked to one another. I mean, yep. God forbid one of them scores a touchdown in the opening week and the other one doesn't, because everybody's heads are going to explode. But I do like the Kerryon Johnson pick for a multitude of reasons. And going back to what you said too, Chris, this SEC thing, I think Bob Quinn has a little bit of an infatuation with the SEC.
Well, I gotta say,
Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, like, for me, like, I didn't even think much of the SEC when the Ragnow pick came in. I just looked because I know Arkansas has always had good linemen. That's like Brett Bielema's special when he was the coach. I think he's no longer the coach, I believe, but he always put out good linemen, whether that be even like a tight end like Hunter Henry. He just knew how to get real beefy guys on that line because that was their identity. Bielema was like ideologically against the spread offense and he wanted to run the dang ball. And so when I saw Ragnow from University of Arkansas, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. Then yeah, when I see Kerryon Johnson from Auburn, who their offense, to call it innovative, is doing it a disservice. I think it is probably the most bizarre offense in college football, but a lot of it does come on being very unique on how you run the football. So like, I think that was kind of the method to the madness, but yeah, go on, Ryan.
Well, I mean, even Lions fans were familiar with Arkansas products playing on the interior of the offensive line. I mean, they just had Travis Swanson for, you know, the past few years. And if it wouldn't have been for concussions, I think that maybe the Lions don't even make this pick. I think, you know, while he has struggled, I think his struggles have mostly been injury related. And he was trending in the right direction towards the end of 2016, or, you know, for the better part of 2016, and just struggled with injuries and concussions ever since. But the SEC thing, I think, is very real. Like, I mean, you go back to, you know, his first drafts, he did take A'shaun Robinson. But in last year's draft, he had 1, 2, 3, you know, 4 players. He had the first 2 picks, Jared Davis and Tease Tabor, both Florida products. Jalen Reeves-Maben in the fourth round, Tennessee. And Jeremiah Ledbetter, another Arkansas player. And in this draft, he picked 3 more SEC players. I think that it's very clear that, you know, that they are a, you know, NFL ready producing conference.
Yeah. And Bob Quinn mentioned it too. Bob Quinn straight up said, I'll quote him again, quote, "The SEC has a great brand of football. I think when you watch SEC football, it's probably the closest thing in terms of scheme to the NFL."
And
then he talks about level of competition, obviously, is much higher than probably any other conference. And he joked around. He said, you know, I know I'm in Big Ten country here, so I'm going to tread lightly. But I mean, he's absolutely right. The SEC is both very much pro ready for a lot of those teams, and just great competition week in and week out.
The Mississippi schools, and I think a little bit of Georgia, do some spread stuff. But yeah, no, absolutely. Just they've always had that reputation for that. And I think a lot of the disconnect here on like where some guys go is that a lot of Lions fans do watch more Big Ten football than they do SEC football. So, but I had a question about Geis, but we're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll get off on my one last thing about Geis, because I think I want to ask this. But then we're going to talk about the defensive side of the ball, which if we saw the plan for the Lions in this draft being on the offensive side, I'm not sure where we're going on defense just yet. And I think there's some criticisms to make, but we need to break down what they did for that side of the ball. So we're taking a quick break. We will be right back here on the Pride of Detroit PODcast. Pride of Detroit, PODcast. That's what you're listening to. You know what you're listening to, but just in case, we're setting it for you. I left it off on there. We kind of went a little long there, so I wanted to get in the break, but I did want to mention Geis because I think what you're saying, Jeremy and Ryan, about Geis being kind of played up against Kerryon Johnson for the rest of their career, entirely plausible. But I just want to ask how legitimately you think these questions suddenly about Geis's maturity. Or I think Bob Quinn mentioned like he didn't think Geis was a good culture pick. Then all of a sudden, for a good culture fit for the Lions. Then all of a sudden, Schefter comes out and says that teams were like moving him down because he said he would kneel for the anthem or something. Like, what do you make of this whole mess?
Well, I didn't hear about that kneel down thing, but there was.
It was one of the things that Adam shouted. Like, you know, that's the thing. It's like Adam Schefter's being fed so much bull on draft time, and it just, he spews it out. There's no filter to the man. He gets a tip from an agent he runs with. He gets a tip from a team he runs with. He doesn't really check anything. It's like the one point of the year where it's like, I have to stop trusting Schefter.
Well, I mean, I don't know about that, but I think the more poignant, the more salient report that was out there was the altercation with the Eagles, where apparently there was like a shouting match and the Eagles said it was the worst interview they've ever had. I think something like that is much more likely, but again, it's reports, it's anonymous sources. We don't know what's real, what's not real, but if there's a reason that he fell, I can't come up with one in terms of his play style. I mean, he's a talented dude, but if he's the kind that's going to get into altercations during essentially a job interview, well, then I can understand the fall.
Yeah. What do you think, Ryan?
Yeah, I can understand the fall too, but at the same time, and there were an awful lot of people before the draft that were mocking Geis to Washington at 13, let alone where they eventually got him in the second round. So maybe Washington saw it as an opportunity to move back in the draft just because they knew so many people were going to end up passing on Geis anyways. Maybe they had removed him from their draft boards or whatever it may have been, or slid him down. But, you know, Washington ended up with the guy that they wanted. At the end of the day, I think when it comes to the Lions picking Kerryon Johnson, that's just it sounds so simple, but like, that's their guy. That's their pick. I think you just kind of move on from that. And I know, like I said, those two are going to be inextricable from one another. They're not going to be able to talk about one guy without thinking about the other guy at the same time. So is it football season yet? Can we just watch them play?
Please. I just want to watch football, all of this stuff here. Now Jeremy's trying to feed me stuff. Jeremy, I'm pretty sure I saw it from a checkmark, Adam Schefter, about his fall. So don't throw that at me. Don't throw that.
You're wrong though.
No, I saw it. I know what I saw.
Okay. You got what's his name?
I got chaps again.
You got chaps again.
I think you may have gotten chaps.
Look, man, I can't deal with it on draft day. I was still really high up on Kerryon that day too, so it's whatever. Anyway, on to the defensive side of the ball. And I think this is so okay. I went on Toledo Radio on Friday, and I said I would be shocked if they didn't pick a defensive lineman in the second round. They didn't. They took Kerryon Johnson, and because I like Kerryon Johnson a lot, I did not have a problem with the pick. But I can completely understand having trepidation with the Lions when all of a sudden they picked one defensive lineman in this draft, and it was, I believe, in the fifth round. Was that fourth, when Tracy Walker went off the board?
Fourth. Deshaun Hand.
God damn it. Sorry, notes scrambled up. Let's
if you want to go, there's a site called Pride of Detroit. We have all the picks listed really simply.
Screw you. I was looking at the site and I still screwed it up. Adequate. Deshaun Hand, who, once again, SEC kid out of Alabama. So we've got two Alabama boys on the interior of this line now, A'shaun and Deshaun. You can come up with a joke there somehow, ACDC. Can we make that?
Sure. Go for it. But POD and ACDC.
But I don't think, like, looking at Deshaun Hand and everything, like, there's a potential for him to be a starter or a but probably more like a rotational player. And that defensive line is still kind of unresolved. Like, I don't know what else to say about it right now. The Lions want to change to as close to a 3-4 base as they can. And they only drafted one defensive lineman on a unit that, I mean, you're putting a lot of, depending on where you sit, you're saying that they're putting a lot of faith in Anthony Zettel to make that next step and a lot of faith in Ezekiel Ansah to come back stronger than ever on a franchise tag.
Yeah. I mean, this is a tough one because the draft essentially started out not by picking up Frank Ragnow, but passing on potentially the best edge rusher in the game with Harold Landry slipping out of their fingers, slipping in deep into the second round. So I think a lot of Lions fans were frustrated to begin with from the get-go, seeing the Lions didn't address that defensive line through the first 2 days. And obviously we can talk about Tracy Walker in a bit, but I thought the Deshaun Hand move was great, to be honest, because Lions are sitting there after they make the Tracy Walker pick. They don't have a pick until the fifth round now. I'm stressed out. I'm frustrated after that second day that they didn't address the defensive line. And I don't know what they're going to do. And again, I admittedly hate trading up, but I thought this situation was, it called for a desperation move. And maybe it's their own fault that it was a desperation move. But to trade next year's third and get Deshaun Hand there in the fourth, I thought was a great move. Because this is a guy who's versatile. He can be a 3-tech. He can be a 5-tech. He can be a 7-tech. That's what Bob Quinn was saying the other night. And the more I think about this draft, the more I like the pick of Deshaun Hand because of a piece that I wrote in February that says, if you're expecting the Lions to draft an edge rusher, you're probably going to be disappointed because Matt Patricia, when he was with the Patriots, just did not value that position that he didn't think it was that important. He was more interested in guys that could hold the edge, that could, you know, have gap integrity, not these guys that are going to be rushing the quarterback every single play and, you know, potentially over rushing him, potentially getting fooled by play action. He's all about gap integrity. And so a guy like Deshaun Hand is not a guy who's going to get a lot of sacks. He's not a guy who's going to be, you know, bending around the edge with his speed. He's a guy who's going to be plugging up gaps, making sure that quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers don't get outside the pocket and have 20 seconds to throw the ball. And he's a guy that's just going to be reliable. And to me, that's something not necessarily to get excited about because, like you said, he's probably not going to be a starter right away. But if it means not seeing Christian Ringo in there, then I'm all for this pick and all for the trade up.
I think some of the disconnect might be because you mentioned there, Jeremy. And Ryan, I want to pitch this to you. But the identity of this Lions defense for the past however many years it's been has been about just that, getting edge rushers into the backfield and disrupting plays. And I think, Ryan, you can tell me if I'm crazy or not. I feel like this is the Lions saying they want to get away from that philosophy to a new, the new thing where you instead plug holes and defend against the pass. Like, should Lions fans really kind of be worried that there's not really this emphasis on an edge rusher anymore?
I don't think you're crazy. At the same time, I think what's been missing from the Lions defense, and we all saw this, the proof was in the pudding. In 2014, the Lions defense, the most successful Lions defense that I've ever seen in my entire lifetime, going back to, 2001 when I was born. But like ever since 2014, it's always been about like what can the Lions do to generate as much push as they could up front. But you think about where the strength lies in this Lions defense right now. and it's all in the back seven. Like yes. the guys that are back there, the secondary, those guys are what really has been working for the Lions. You know, in 2016 they couldn't really force any turnovers. Then all of a sudden in 2017 it's, you know, all these interceptions from Darius Slay and Glover Quinn and Quandre Diggs forcing fumbles, and you know, it really became a secondary oriented defense. So if you want to take advantage of that right now, I think you go back to what Jeremy was saying. You start getting these guys that fit Patricia's MO, these guys who adhere to, you know, gap integrity, and you get these guys like Devon Kennard, and you get, you know, somebody like Deshaun Hand in the fourth round that you can move up, who may not be the best pass rusher, but it was noticeable. I saw a tweet the other day talking about somebody watching some Deshaun Hand tape from the national championship game, and he's going up against Isaiah Wynn, who happened to be the guy that the Patriots took at 23. Talked about how, you know, Deshaun Hand was able to hold his ground against Wynn the entire game, but at the same time didn't really do much as a pass rusher. Okay, maybe they can work on some of those skills going into the NFL, but at the same time, who did the Lions lose this offseason? They lost Haloti Ngata, a guy who was really good at filling up and eating up space and stopping the run. Maybe that's what they're looking to replace. Maybe they still aren't ready to take that three-tech defensive tackle because he just wasn't there in the draft. Maybe he wasn't worth moving up for. But at least now, I think a couple of things with the Deshaun Hand pick. For one, you get a guy who Bo Davis has coached before in his first two seasons. I mean, Hand came into Alabama as the number one high school recruit in the country. I mean, he was ahead of guys like Leonard Fournette, Miles Garrett, Deshaun Watson. Like, I mean, the names keep going on and on. But, like, this is a guy who maybe feels some comfortability with, with Bo Davis there now as the defensive line coach for the Lions. And then also, you know, he played a year with A'shaun Robinson.
I was so just about to bring it up. That's amazing, yeah, for chemistry.
Yeah, I think if you bring a guy into a situation in which he can be inoculated, and it's a good, positive, promoting situation where you have some guys with some familiarity, maybe you can get the most out of a guy now, you know, up front. Maybe you can get some of the things you might be looking at projecting like 2 or 3 years. Bob Quinn talks about this all the time. It's not about how the draft class does in the first year. It's all about how they, you know, the steps that they take in years two and years three. Maybe you get some of that front loaded with a guy like Hand, who is coming into a situation where he's just much more familiar and much more comfortable.
Okay. The other player I wanted to bring up, the one I accidentally read earlier, Tracy Walker, Lions backfield. And it's good you brought up the emphasis, and I agree with you there. I feel like the Lions want to emphasize their backfield and their linebackers now. Tracy Walker had a lot of people scrambling to find tape, though, which seems really weird to me. And I feel like y'all out here just don't respect the mid-major. I don't even want to call them mid-majors anymore. The G5, the Group of Five conferences. Tracy Walker played in the East-West Shrine Game. Did no one go to the East-West Shrine Game and pay attention? Jeremy, help me out here, because, like, I think the biggest disconnect people saw was those videos where you had Bob Quinn and Matt Patricia and I believe one of their scouts all just, like, really excited to get Tracy Walker, and everyone else was trying to find, for the first time in their life, watching Ragin' Cajuns football.
Yeah, it was an interesting pick, and if you were watching our Pride Detroit live feed, all of us were kind of scratching our heads, including Kentley Platty, like the guy who does the deepest research of anyone I know that, you know, doesn't work for ESPN or NFL Network, and probably a lot deeper than some of those guys too, had no idea who the guy was. And that will leave you scratching your head, especially when you see the Lions director of player personnel, Lance Newmark, you know, just like slapping everyone's hands that he can find. This dude was really pumped about this pick. And, you know, it's always been my philosophy with the draft, the way that I treat it, is to make judgments on the position, make judgments on whether they trade up and trade down, but don't make judgments on the players, because these guys are looking for very specific things and very specific skill sets, and they obviously have a lot more resources than I do at my disposal. So the fact that they took a small school guy, this is, I mean, I hate to keep bringing this all back to the Patriots, but this is a very Patriots move where they found a guy that they really, really like. This is a guy that also was probably right about to get picked by the Panthers, who had their GM show up to Louisiana Lafayette's pro day and had to pick two after the Lions. The Lions got this guy right before he was going to go. And just because everyone else is catching up to them means I'm not going to criticize this pick unless you want to talk about grabbing a safety ahead of a defensive lineman. But I think the way the board fell, the Lions didn't feel like there was a defensive lineman worth it there in the third, which is why they waited into the fourth to grab Hand.
I mean, I guess it just, again, this is the Sun Belt. This is in the FBS. This is in the top half of Division One. This isn't an FCS school. This isn't an Ivy League school. This isn't Division Two. They play against big name teams out there. So I don't know where the disconnect came.
Well, and that's a good point to bring up too, because that's one of the reasons I think Bob Quinn fell in love with the guy, besides his performance at the East-West Shrine Game, or at least during the practices of the East-West Shrine Game week. He said, you know, Louisiana Lafayette played a few big games every year and he showed up in all of them. So I think that's one thing why he likes the SEC, and it's why he liked Tracy Walker, is because they show up in big games. And we can go and break down Tracy Walker's game bit by bit, and maybe we'll do that over the next couple weeks. But this was a position of need. It was about fourth or fifth on our list, safety. The Lions are going to be using a lot of safeties. We don't know how long we're going to have a guy like Glover Quinn. Miles Killebrew, this could be, you know, the death knell for him. Maybe he's not going to be hanging around on much longer. But I have no reason to really criticize this pick other than it was surprising.
So just as final notes, we got 2 minutes here, or actually just 1 minute, but still, I'm going to pitch this back to each of you guys and just give me a really short answer, though. Just to kind of sum this up, do you feel like the Lions did enough with the defense in this draft that you are not as worried about them? Or are you worried that they didn't pick up enough? We'll start with Ryan.
No, they didn't do enough. And it isn't a problem to me, because at least they had a true plan, and their plan was to improve the run game. So I'm very happy that that happened. At the same time, their defense, it's still going to lead. There's still an awful lot of question marks.
Jeremy.
I'm a little more optimistic about it, to be honest. I was definitely going to be worried if they didn't add a guy like Deshaun Hand in the fourth, but I think you're going to see them add at least one more piece along the defensive line, and we've already seen them bulk up the linebacking crew. So I think this defense is going to be a lot more improved. And one thing you have to consider, a guy like A'shaun, he's probably going to be a lot better under this new scheme, right? Because now he also has one of his former coaches, and now he has a Matt Patricia defense that's a lot like Alabama's defense. So I'm actually pretty optimistic about the defense going forward. I would say it should be mid-tier.
All right, let's take a break here. When we come back, we will talk a little bit more about the draft. Maybe we'll have you two square off about the defense then, since we got a little bit of concerns coming on here. If not, we've got some more stuff to talk about, the late rounds, some of the undrafted free agents that are happening right now, and just general thoughts from the draft itself. So stick around. We'll be right back. Pride of Detroit PODcast rolls along. I am Chris Perfett, your adequate host. Ryan Matthews, the rock god here, is going to now talk about, we've been spending a lot of time thinking about what we believe the Lions have been kind of showing their hand of what their plan might be. We've basically been doing guesswork, but now here comes the time for maybe some criticisms about things I don't think we think the Lions did not get right, or guys you might have missed on that you were really hoping the Lions to take. So Ryan, you were mentioning something here. You do not think the Lions, you think that they neglected the defense enough that it really worries you going into the 2018 season. Can you expand upon that?
Yeah, I think it's fairly easy to see. I know that they went out and they got some linebackers that fit Patricia's defense in free agency, but I really thought the expectation going into the draft was that the Lions needed to get a defensive lineman, a quality one, within the first 2 days. And I mean at least one. And that just never came to fruition. And at the same time, yes, I understand that the Lions had this plan in place to go interior offensive line, get a running back, build that running game, take a lot of the pressure off Matthew Stafford. And I'm totally with it. I love that part of their draft. I love that that's the direction they went in. However, I think if anything's been proven over the past couple of seasons, while Matthew Stafford has taken his fair share of bumps, Matthew Stafford can win games. And Matthew Stafford can win games with the talent that he has around him, the talent that's currently on the roster before this draft. So if there was any one place where I want to see the Lions really improve, it was to get a couple of players on defense, especially, you know, in the front seven, that could be game changers in terms of guys who can put pressure on quarterbacks and, you know, have, you know, turn the second and fours into second and nines or second and 12s. It just seemed like it was so obvious that the Lions needed to get a contingency plan for Ezekiel Ansah, because this was one of the biggest blunders by the Mayhew regime. It wasn't drafting Eric Ebron because he was a tight end. It was neglecting the fact that Ndamukong Suh probably wasn't going to come back, or at the very least, the money that it was going to take to bring him back was going to be far too expensive. So they didn't have a contingency plan in place for when Suh was going to leave. And it's starting to kind of feel like that with Ansah this year, playing on the franchise tag. Behind him, the Lions have Kerry Hyder, who I'm a huge fan of Kerry Hyder, but who knows how he's going to play coming back from Achilles. And you have Anthony Zettel, who played well in the first half of the season, but, you know, disappeared in the second half. So it's tough to get excited or to have a lot of faith in that rotation of players.
I definitely get that sentiment, Ryan, and I think you have to go back a little bit to the fact that I don't think this Lions team is going to have a premier pass rusher much anymore. I just don't think that's going to be the identity of the defense. And we also have to point out that Ezekiel Ansah is also a good run defender, and I think that's going to be a trickier thing for them to really replace. But I think one of the main criticisms of this draft, and I kind of agree with them, is just the order that they went with needs, right? Because we went into this draft, we knew that interior offensive line was deep. We knew we could maybe wait for that if we wanted to. We knew that defensive line talent was not deep at all. And I think Bob Quinn would agree with that. That's why he didn't go defensive line in the third round. They had missed out on all that talent. And there were even some rumors there from based on what Bob Quinn said, that maybe they were even thinking about moving up in the third to grab a defensive line talent, but it didn't happen. So I think if anything, the order that they went with these picks was what was troublesome. But then you kind of look, again, this is more of a hindsight thing. You look at how the board fell. Really, the top tier of interior offensive linemen were all gone by 51, where the Lions would have picked at second. You know, Connor Williams is kind of the last one of that group to go right before 51, 50 to the Cowboys. So if the Lions hadn't gone with how they did, you know, with how they went center with Ragnow in the first, maybe they wouldn't have gotten that interior offensive line position fixed. And to me, I said it all offseason, I thought that was the biggest need. And so the fact that because they addressed that early, they weren't able to pick up on a defensive lineman early, maybe it worked out in the end. But it was stressful watching and seeing it happen. And then, you know, watching them go all the way through the first 2 days without a defensive lineman, I was as frustrated with you, which is all the more reason why I was psyched when they went up and got one in the fourth.
And so I can buy almost all of that, and I understand that. The one thing that I will challenge you on is this idea that maybe the Lions defense, and based on, you know, Patricia's defense of yesteryears, is that the Lions maybe won't value a top end or, you know, a – yeah, let's just say it. You know, they're not going to value getting a top end pass rusher. If that's the case, then why slap the franchise tag on Ansah? Why not just let him walk and distribute that money elsewhere? I think that if that's the case, if you know, if Patricia can manufacture these guys who, like you said, can set the edge. We know that Ansah's he's a pretty good run defender. I wouldn't call him elite by any means or anything like that. But if that's what they're going to be placing their priority on, if that's what they want to emphasize, if they want guys like that, then maybe they probably should have spent that money, you know, in another way.
Yeah. That, I mean, that's definitely a fair point. I do think the run defending has something to do with it, but it's always tough when you have a good edge rusher already in town, right? Like, he's already a Detroit Lion. You have full rights to him. To let that go is tricky, and I don't think even if Ziggy had a successful 2017 season where he didn't struggle with injuries, I wouldn't be too sure if that Bob Quinn would have given him a long-term deal. I think the fact that it's a one-year deal while he kind of resets the defense, resets the whole personnel, he's willing to take on that hit. But it does say something, I think, in terms of maybe they do value an edge rusher a little bit more than I'm leading on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can see that too. You know, it is the idea that maybe it is a stopgap. Maybe it is a way to, like you said, to reset the defense. You have a new coach coming in, a whole new coaching regime. You need to take an off season to change things around. You know, maybe it was just happen chance that they were able to, you know, swap out Whitehead and Worrello and get, you know, Devin Kennard and get Christian Jones and be able to change over the linebackers as quickly as they did in one off season, like they did to get some premier edge talent, especially in the vein of somebody like Ezekiel Ansah. Like, you're going to pay through the nose for it. And that just wasn't going to happen with the free agency, with the money that they had going into free agency. So I agree with you. I think if Ansah would have put up another season like he did in 2015, where he had 14 and a half sacks and was one of the, you know, best pass rushers in the NFL, I still think Bob Quinn would have turned his nose at signing a guy like that long-term. So I think with this draft, more than anything, what you saw was the Lions put more emphasis on the offensive line and put more emphasis on the offense. And I think that if you want to call anything the Patriot way, you know, the Patriots have had one of the top offenses in the league for however many years. You know, they've put up bucket loads of points. They've been one of the better offenses in the NFL year after year. And their defense has done just enough to keep teams from scoring touchdowns. Maybe that's going to be the same. Maybe that's going to be the same formula for success here in Detroit. And maybe that's why Bob Quinn is investing a pick like Frank Ragnow, Tyrell Crosby.
But you're setting up for someone to really come back at you and saying, "Yeah, but the Lions don't have Tom Brady."
You're right. They got Matthew Stafford, baby.
System quarterback, anyways.
God, I do want to have an offseason war at some point about Matt Stafford, but I know people hate talking about that.
Well, they have John O'Korn, Chris. They have John O'Korn.
Thank you for giving me the transition I wanted to talk about what everyone loves talking about, undrafted free agents. Clearly, apparently. So what's been the undrafted free agent you could see that, let's just say, charitably can make the Lions roster? Who is that going to be?
I couldn't. I honestly, if I didn't have the list in front of me, I wouldn't be able to name one. So I have no idea. I was way too busy this week and to even dip my toe into this UDFA pool. I don't care. I know that every year the Lions have a couple that, you know, like, they'll have a couple that will play a couple snaps. You know, we had Ledbetter and Tion Green last year, and that's great. But we don't want to see those guys this year, right?
Do we really Jeremy, want to see what it? If they get Kurt Wagner as an undrafted free agent, just waiting there, man. He's waiting there to show you that you just passed up on him completely.
The only guy I wanted to see them sign was Hercules Mataafa, and they didn't. So I think this UDFA pool is just utter crap because none of them are going to win the name bracket tournament either.
Really? I think Anthony Sherrills is low-key a pretty solid entry.
Yeah, that's your Italian blood coming out.
Is that what that is?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know. What do you think? Is there anyone that grabbed your interest here, Ryan? No? No? Why do we do this, by the way, every year? Like, we do this every year. Some people really want to know undrafted free agents.
It's one of the most popular things that happens with the draft, and it honestly blows my mind every year.
Annually, it's the most popular post. I don't know if people realize that, but it literally does better. Our undrafted free agent tracker does better than just about any other post every year, the entire year.
I have a theory. I have a theory why that is. And it's because it's a distillation of what people wanting to prognosticate the draft want to be. They want to be saying that they were the smart, informed person who just knew this guy would be the guy. He would be the guy who would blow up. They know the guy who's going to be the best guy in the draft. And they're so prescient. They're so knowledgeable. Please, someone just give them a job as a scout. Obviously, internet commenter, you could be a scout in the NFL. Yeah.
That's Alex Reno and Jay Lee.
And who?
Jay Lee, the wide receiver who did not make the team ever.
Oh, right. Yeah, I remember. No, I remember that, actually. Yeah, were we? I was at a training camp with him on that. Yeah, I remember now. Yep. Oh, boy. Yeah.
I got one more topic that we can talk about.
Since
I was kind of the good cop on the defense and Ryan was kind of the bad cop on the defense, can we talk a little bit more about the trade to get up Kerryon Johnson? Because I'm definitely bad cop here.
I'll be good cop in that I think trading up doesn't matter as much as you apparently think it does. It doesn't matter. As long as you get the guy you want, it really doesn't matter. I don't care that there's a hypothetical fourth rounder or was it third rounder? It doesn't matter. I don't even correct me on that. Doesn't matter. It's capital at the end of the day. Well, it's theoreticals. And it's like, whatever, man. Like, look, I'm so far into the blow everything in your assets camp after watching the Rams do that this offseason. I'm such a fan of that to try to just win no matter what, that I just don't care about the 5-year plan or the 4-year plan. I don't care anymore. Go get yourself some ballers.
I don't mind being aggressive in general as a general strategy for an offseason, especially if you think you're close.
Yeah,
and
absolutely done that. You've absolutely been the
Let
guy
me finish
always
my
talking
point.
Caution. Go on. No. I'm just saying, though. I'm just calling you out on that.
I'm just talking in the draft, though. You don't want to fall in love with a prospect. You just don't. I'm sorry. It's bad. You're almost always wrong. Everyone's wrong. Every good GM, every bad GM, they're wrong. So if you fall in love with a guy so much that you're certain he's going to be like you're certain someone's going to take him, you're certain he's going to be an all-pro or whatever, you're probably wrong. And so using you can't just brush off a fourth-round draft pick like it means nothing. This team had a lot of holes to fill, and by moving up to get Kerryon Johnson, they had less room to do it now, and it essentially cost them next year's third round pick because they had to jump back into the fourth round to finally address that defensive line. And so I don't like the idea of trading up to get a guy. I don't think running back was that big of a need where they absolutely had to do it. They had to just, to me, if they could have just been fine sitting there at 51, if Geis or Kerryon were still there, great, get one. But to make that sort of an aggressive move when running back wasn't, to me, even a top three need at that point, it just didn't make sense to me.
I will retort by saying there's very rare chances. I don't think the third round is as much of a lock as people think when it comes to these picks at the end of the day. Again, giving up one in the next few years just does not bother me. And more of the fact is, I disagree with your assessment that they were in love with Kerryon Johnson. Yes, they traded some capital to do it because they were kind of worried. Who knows? Who knows why they traded the capital to get up there? Clearly, they saw something in them they liked. I wouldn't call it complete love. And I don't think these GMs get that, you know, enmeshed. They're so narrow-minded that it's like, oh, no, we might lose on a third-round freaking offensive tackle who's going to be, like, second on the depth chart next year.
You saw how pumped they were when they took Tracy Walker, man. This is an emotional war room.
Sure. But that's, I think these are just emotional guys. Like, Bob Quinn walks in there with a baseball bat. Come on. Like, I think that's just their personality. They got, now that they've got, you know, this entire contingent of expatriates, it's like they've got their good old boys club up there and they just want to slap some skin when they get the guy. Yeah. No, I disagree. I think it was that big of a thing because I don't think there's a future for Amir Abdullah in Detroit. And I think it's a little sad because I think Abdullah had the potential to be really talented, but, and you know me, this is my beef with when they got rid of Amir Abdullah. I did not like this idea because I'm tired of hearing the words, oh, I think he'll work out somewhere else, just not Detroit. I don't know if Amir Abdullah worked out somewhere else, and that's a lot more to say on his, you know, injuries and everything else has happened at this point. But you know what? Even if they had Ragnow, I do not see a future with Amir Abdullah, like, looking at that line, finding the exact wrong hole to run up and getting half a yard. I'm ready for Kerryon Johnson. And that just is telling you, too, how much I like Auburn. I like the running backs that come out of Auburn. And I like what's going to happen with this Lions run game, which has been dead last in this goddamn league for so long. I'm tired of it, and I'm ready for something new. And if that means eventually giving up on a third rounder so you can get, like, third on the depth chart for, like, a cornerback in a couple of years, fine by me. We should take a break, though, and get on to the mailbag. Are you guys ready for mailbag talk?
I've been dying already, for it.
You've been dying for it. Let's do it. Mailbag up next.
Mail time.
Mail time.
Mail time.
Mail time.
The mail's here.
Here's the mail, it never fails. It makes me want to wag my tail. When it comes, I want to wail.
Mail time. Hashtag ask POD for all your questions. We got this one out a bit late, so we're a little light on the mailbag. So we're going to really tease this one out, I think. So, Jeremy, why don't we get to the reviews first? And then I have something to say to the POD crowd.
Okay, cool. All right, we got our last two reviews. So we need some more reviews. If you guys haven't given your shout out, get over to iTunes, give us a nice review, and we'll read it word for word, as long as there's no naughty words in it. Or sometimes if there are, we'll do that too. Our first review, 5 stars, comes from Walkman32. Enjoyable Lions content. While I may not always agree with you guys, you always provide legitimate reasons for what you say. I'm glad I found the POD cast, and I always crack a smile when a new one drops. Appreciate you guys. Walker Kelly at WalkerKelly13.
Thank you, I appreciate Walker. It. And you know what? You don't need to agree with us on everything. That's the beauty of this. We're not asking you to agree with us. We're just, maybe some of the shit we say is going to change your mind. Otherwise, like, hey, at least we hope you'll broaden your horizon.
Right? It's all about listening to the opposing point of view sometimes, right? We don't do that enough.
Yeah, unless, well, there's some viewpoints that I just don't care about. But in sure. Sports, in the realm of sports, I will listen to almost anyone.
Our last and second review comes from I Want Inside Info, 5 stars. Says, such a great show. Guys don't follow the media hype. They give great in-depth analysis, understand the true team needs, and aren't afraid to think outside the box. Side note, they do have a, quote, knack recommending food and, quote, things of that nature from time to time. Curious what other people think of the POD cast. Check the report. It all checks out, right?
Those Caldwellisms are going to fade to time and eventually be forgotten, and I'm sad for it.
There'll be new ones. We'll have some new Matt Patricia ticks or quotes or whatever it is. Thing is, you just have to slow that dude down because he talks so fast.
He is a mile a minute, my man there. Yeah. To his thing, I want more inside info. I mean, we're going to see what's happening over the summer. This kind of dovetails into what I talk about, so I might be busy for quite a while, but I'm going to make sure we can try to maybe get some more interesting content for y'all, because I know that sometimes, especially in the off season, we kind of get in our own rut, but that's fine. I'm always happy to keep hearing people happy with this thing. And that brings me to this, is just thanks, guys. Once again, like, I'm, for those not in the know, people keep asking about this because I don't talk about it enough on Twitter, but I've been doing my master's in journalism. I filed my capstone, which is kind of like our thesis, on Friday night. It's a huge relief off my shoulders, and I will keep forever saying this. I would not have gone back to school for a master's if it wasn't for this POD cast and all the stuff I got to do at Pride of Detroit. So thanks to everyone at Pride of Detroit. Thanks to you, the audience, for convincing me that I was, like, half good, or at least good enough to either, like, hate all of my viewpoints or something, but good enough that, you know, you thought at least the writing was good.
What's a word for, like, good enough? I can't really think of one right now.
I can't either. Ryan, do you know what it is?
What?
He's playing Fortnite again. I knew it.
No, it's just, that's my gimmick. I have to pretend like I don't know what's going on. It's telework.
Which is... this is a worked shoot right here, folks.
But yeah, I am playing Fortnite.
Okay, so it was a shoot. Speaking of which, Mike, I will post my
work shoot.
Yeah, I know we're getting dangerously close to wrestling talk here, but my capstone, it does involve professional wrestling and people that decide to become professional wrestlers. So I will post the link on my Twitter again, PERFETT, Chris Perfett, later this evening, I think. And then you should definitely check it out. I'm very happy with it. I'm hoping to eventually come up with a couple stories. I met a real lot of cool, interesting people while doing it. And for PODcast fans, if you look close enough, you might see the mug of someone very familiar in there.
Yeah, baby.
All right, let's get to the mailbag questions before we get too far up our own butthole. All right, let's start with Brett Kuznow. I want to pose my conspiracy theory that Bob Quinn always wanted 2 years to fix the roster before he hired Patricia. What are your thoughts?
This isn't the first time I've heard something along these lines, and it's kind of an interesting thought to have, you know. It's also, you know, maybe Bob Quinn needed some help along the way. His first time as a general manager, maybe he didn't want to make it completely his team right away, but I don't think I buy it. I think it was, even though I thought at the time Bob Quinn was going to get rid of Jim Caldwell and kind of put his stamp on the team immediately, let's just say Jim Caldwell kind of made it hard for him to fire him. He did.
He had the locker room on his side after 2016. He really did. Yeah.
He had the locker room on his side. The team was doing okay. They made the playoffs. It's hard to say.
I also don't think Patricia was really ready to be a head coach at that point just yet. Like, you needed at least two more years with the Patriots. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I'm kind of worried the way we're going with coordinators just immediately slotting into head coaching roles rather than like head coaching experience from some other rank somewhere. But hey, man, it's whatever. It's what we do. Let's see here. We got some questions over the weekend, so I'm going to go to Pat Burr WA. So now that the draft is done and we know the initial offseason roster, is it too soon to call this team a 16-0 team?
It's never too early to do that. So
what were those? So I did my predictions when the season schedule came out. And now I'm scrolling back. Do you remember what percentage did vote for 16-0, Jeremy?
Not off the top of my head. I think the majority was, 10-6? I think that's almost what it always is every year. Yeah. 10-6,
every
10-6,
year.
10-6.
Every year. Every goddamn year.
Yeah, but I do feel better after the draft. I'm not going to lie. As much as I've been belly itching about the trade up for Kerryon, I feel better. And I probably was around a 9-7 guy before the draft.
I was 7-9, I think, a little bit. I think I was 7-9. I think I'm still sticking with that, but I do feel a little better, and I think they can exceed my expectations.
Yeah. The thing is, I haven't really scouted everyone else and how they've done in the draft, so it'd be weird for me to just like, oh, well, I saw how the Lions did, so it's clearly they're going to be better next year because, you know, All 32 teams theoretically got better over the weekend, so I'd have to check in that before I change my prediction.
Well, not all 32. Like,
theoretically,
I mean,
speaking.
Theoretically, I'm just saying Lamar Jackson was a great move for the Ravens, but then they just fumbled the ball after that.
Hey, man, that was their GM's last draft. Ozzie Newsome, RIP.
Okay. Pepper actually had another question. I should not have ignored this one. Did the sighting of Jeremy Reisman eating mozzarella sticks change the draft board for Pride of Detroit?
Listen, that did not happen.
You just got chapsed again.
Was that Mike selling fake news to the people?
It was. He ordered mozzarella sticks for the pure the pure purpose of just yellow journalism. I can't speak right now.
Did he at least eat them? Like, that's even worse. Let food go to waste. Okay, at least he ate them, then.
He ate them, and who was the other person that ordered them? Was it Yost or was it Kato?
It was Andrew.
It was Kato. Yeah. Kato really disappointed me over the weekend.
We knew since Philly that Kato is police.
That's true.
He is food police.
But the rest of us, I was surprised at how many people did not order wings at Sweetwater. Like, what are you doing?
What? Come on.
Yeah.
We had nine guys there, and I think five ordered wings, maybe six?
No, five, yeah. I think it was five guys that ordered wings, not to get confused. But there were there were at least four guys who ordered a, was it pulled pork sandwich?
Yeah. It looked delicious, but you're at Sweetwater. Get wings. They were delicious.
Which brings us to the next question from Go Blue Griff. What was the food spread like in the POD war room?
Ryan, I think this is your specialty.
It was very chip oriented. I woke up Friday morning with an awful stomach ache because I think I ate a whole bag of what kind of chips were they?
Ranch jalapeno?
That was on day two. I didn't learn my lesson on day one, so I went back to the chip bag on day two. But day one, I think, was Cool Ranch Doritos. Oh, and salt and vinegar chips.
Ooh, both solid, but I can see how they need a tummy ache.
We eventually ate some meals too, so we got some slows to go, which was delicious, and we had a buddy's night.
Yeah, that's always good. Nick Coscarelli, asking, which jersey should I buy, Ragnow or Kerryon Johnson?
Ragnow, because, I mean, how cool does that look on the back of a jersey? And it's an offensive lineman, so.
Yeah, listen, I really want Kerryon Johnson's jersey, but the problem is it's Johnson on the back, and there's just too many Johnsons.
You think they go K Johnson?
Laugh it up.
Hold on. I don't know, Chris, if you heard the joke that Jerry told on Facebook Live, but
I didn't.
Well, can I tell it now, Jeremy, or no?
Yeah, man, go for it.
So Lions draft Kerryon Johnson. I think we give all of our instant analysis. And Jerry Mallory, in true Jerry Mallory fashion, right when the room gets kind of quiet, hey guys, do you know what you call a sex toy that you carry, that you bring on a plane? A Kerryon Johnson.
Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ, Jerry.
It's all that I could think about when I was at the airport today while I was just having my luggage scanned. Just like, oh, I'm glad I didn't bring my Kerryon Johnson.
He's going to be showing up on the podcast more often. I'm going to make sure we have more Jerry on this pod. He gets really ranchy when it does.
There were requests for a spinoff podcast with Jerry and Ryan in the Facebook Live.
People want more Jerry and they want more Ryan.
The two best parts, really. Another draft question here coming on up from, I just had him here. Peter Meyer, why re-sign Zenner if they get two new players and a new fullback?
Well, I mean, I think it's because they didn't know they were going to get a running back and a fullback in the draft. I think you just have them there just in case. Like, the board is not necessarily always going to fall the way you want it to. They aren't. You know, maybe Kerryon Johnson had gone in the first, and then they don't know what they would have done. And I think fullback was just kind of like, well, it's a seventh round. Let's try a fullback. Like, I don't think we should go into this draft thinking that the Lions have, you know, their fullback of the future. I don't necessarily think that guy's going to make the roster. Lions could decide, hey, the whole Bill Orr thing was working out. We save a roster spot that way. We don't take one away from the running backs. This guy can also play linebacker. He can also play defense. He can also play special teams. I wouldn't read too much into the fullback edition quite yet.
That's fair. And yeah, like, you can't go into the draft cutting all your loose baggage, assuming you're just going to get guys that you need. So,
right.
Ryan Wolashin, would you prefer Ragnow at center or left guard? I think it's going to be the question of the entire offseason. Is it going to be Glasgow or Ragnow at center?
I don't have a preference at this point. And just because
Ragnow did play enough at guard where it's not out of the question that I think that he could end up lining up at guard and having Glasgow play center. With that being said, I don't know if you just want him to not play guard or not play center just because he played so well there. Like, I mean, if the guy played center so well, then why not just have him play that position that he is so good at? Like,
I mean, here, let me pose it to you this way. You can only have one 5-star player on the offensive line. Do you put that at left guard or do you put it at center?
I think the answer to that is you put it at center, right, Jeremy?
Yeah. And I talked a lot with the Pride of Detroit crew about this question itself, because, you know, the kind of popular sentiment is that the center is the guy who calls out the protections and all sort of things like that. And if that's the case, you probably want someone like Graham Glasgow, who's been in the Jim Bob Cooter offense for a few years, doing that. But the truth is, anyone along the interior can do that. And it doesn't have to be Ragnow if he's the center. He doesn't have to be the one calling out all the plays. He's just the one that has to snap the ball. And the Lions have some veteran guys alongside him on each side now. So I think you're right. I think keep him at center, and that's his best position. And I think when he played guard in college, it was at right guard, was it not? And I don't think TJ Lang has any danger of losing his job to him. So I say keep him at center. Keep Graham Glasgow on the left, even though I think the original plan was to move him inside. Just keep everyone at their best position.
Fair enough. Jason Kenny asking us, what do I say to a coworker hell-bent on saying the guys just drafted are busts because they didn't match his personal rankings and that of Mel Kiper? So here's the thing. And I kind of went on this rant too, is that people really cling to their rankings that they've had pre-draft, even after the draft, very well. And they love that word, overdrafted. They love that word because they think they're so much more clever than guys actually hired to be general managers, that they know that, you know, this guy isn't actually one of the best centers out there. He's actually like the fifth rated because their ranking said so. Why? What reasoning do they have in their ranking? Fuck knows. But it is.
Yeah, it's a little silly. And I think the best evidence that the Lions got quote unquote good value out of their picks, it was that Schefter report that essentially they grabbed Ragnow right before he was going to pick. They grabbed Kerryon right before he was going to pick. I mean, you can make the argument for the first 4 picks that they got him right before they're about to go. So regardless of whatever your personal rankings were, it's clear that the scouting departments of more than one teams kind of agreed with the value of where the Lions got all their guys. And it's funny, we haven't even really talked about him, but the best quote-unquote value the Lions may have gotten was in the 5th round, right? We haven't even talked about him, but the offensive tackle, Tyrell Crosby.
Yeah, Crosby, yeah. I think at the end of the day, what it comes down to is, do you think that Mel Kiper can do a better job than NFL scouts? If so, he should probably apply to be in the actual league itself.
Right.
That's what it comes down to. Otherwise, he's just and I'm sure Mel Kiper, if you can get him honest, will admit as much. He is just an entertainer. He's there to put out those rankings, change them up every now and then, stick with them because he is the guy who is on TV. Once again, here comes the wrestling talk. It's a work. It's a work out there to convince you he is the most knowledgeable drafty draft McDraft guy. And now there's a bunch of talk this week about like people should have like their past 3 years of draft results on display to see how well they do. I think that's really missing the point. All of this is just noise. It's good noise. It's noise people want to hear. They want to be entertained and argue and bicker. And I think that's what your coworker, to get back to Mr. Kenny's original question here was, I think that's what your coworker has fallen into. It's like, these are just guys to entertain you. And I think that's what you wanted to say to him. But at the end of the day, even just kind of arguing with him about it is playing into the idea. He's entertained by the idea of arguing over this stuff. And that's a lot of what sports media is now. It's entertaining you by arguments. It's trying to change, maybe a mind get changed here and there, or maybe you just get challenged, but other than that, it's here to entertain you like everything else, because there's not enough sports to fill our day. There's not. There's only 16 of these. There's only like, you know, 16 weekends of football games, and there's even dead periods in the calendar, even if you like other sports. We got to do something here. Ryan, any thoughts?
What?
There it is. Speaking of that question from Finch Ty, worst sports month of the year, what is it? We had this bit last year. We kept saying every month was like the worst month of the NFL offseason. But Ryan, what do you think it is?
I think it might be July. And I say that for a couple of reasons. For one, you don't have anything else really going on in sports besides baseball. And
even baseball takes a break in there. Yeah.
Right. Spoiler alert. Baseball is pretty boring. But yeah, I mean, July, there's just not a whole lot going on.
Yeah, it's 1,000% July, right? Like that, the NBA playoffs and NHL playoffs are over by then. We're still a couple months away from NCAA football and NFL football, and
we're, yeah, it's just, you know, a month away from SummerSlam.
No, I mean, that is that a positive or a negative?
I mean, we're out.
Yes, we're still. Yes, just say it. You're on the road to WrestleMania.
Why'd you have to bring up me like that?
Because it's not funny anymore.
Yes, it is. Yes, it
is. You're smiling right now. I can tell when Jeremy Reisman's smiling, and you're smiling right now.
I haven't smiled since the Lions traded up to get Kerryon Johnson.
That's a lie, because well, maybe it isn't a lie. Maybe you haven't smiled. I don't know.
Nah, there was double overtime hockey last night. I was smiling then.
Well, that was my next question. Can we turn our blog into a Golden Knights blog?
Is there even a Golden Knights blog on the SB Nation network? I think there is, but I haven't looked.
If there isn't, then they're blowing it.
Seriously, what a story. Did you see, like, you know, they, so, you know, the Red Wings have Journey, Don't Stop Believing. The Golden Knights have Viva Las Vegas as their, like, victory music. And now they're having the Bellagio fountains turn on. The Bellagio fountains are, like, turning on and playing Viva Las Vegas when the Golden Knights win.
There is, by the way. It's called Knights on Ice.
I like it. What a story, though. What a story. And I just hope that, like, they continue it so it doesn't turn into, like, being... Because that's what happened with Carolina, right? They got the Whalers. They went and got a cup and, like, the first year, and everyone was crazy. Like, they set noise records inside that arena, and then they just sucked forever after that.
Yeah.
And everyone lost. Now no one goes to Carolina Hurricanes games.
Didn't they win the Stanley Cup?
That's what I mean. Their first year in Carolina after they relocated from Hartford, they won a cup.
Wild. Oh yeah. Rod Brindamore's ugly ass. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he was on that team. Dude, he was an ugly dude. Good hockey player, but God.
Blake Berry asking us, how would you bet on this? Over under 28 points per game for the Lions.
I saw this question and I had to do a little bit of research before I answered it properly. There were only four teams last year that averaged 28 or more points last year. The Saints, the Eagles, the Patriots, the Rams. So you're basically asking if this is going to be a top five offense, top four offense.
Yeah, I'm going to have to take the under.
But the Lions were seventh last year with 25.6.
I'm still taking the under just because, seems like a safer bet.
Are they a field goal better offense per game right now than they were last year?
Listen, and I think a lot of this for me taking the under two goes back to why I pegged the team to go 7-9 and that people got mad at. I just don't think that a first year head coach, a rookie head coach in every respect, is going to come in and immediately turn this team into a better place. That just I don't remember. You can point to Sean McVay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can point to him all you want, but that doesn't happen every year. Right. Like, I think this is going to be a good team. I just think there's going to be some growing pains, and I'll believe it when I see it.
I think this is a really good question, and I think the offense, I mean, in terms of points per game, they were really good last year, but if you look at Football Outsiders, I don't think they were that good. I think they're a very middle of the road offense. I think you're going to see a much more efficient offense, whether that means continuing getting 27, 28 points per game. Not really sure, but I'm excited. I'm excited for this offense. I think it has a chance. I'm I just my general cautiousness says to take the under here, but it's going to be very close to 28 points per game, I think.
Ryan,
I'm taking the over, man. They're going to finish as a top three offense, because what happened in that Sunday night game against the Steelers will never happen ever again. They will never fail to pick up a yard when they are in need of a yard. It will not happen again, not in my lifetime. Granted, I've only been on this earth for, you know, 6 or 7 years, but.
And there it is. And that's how we're going to end it. Have a good one, folks. Thank you for listening to the Pride Detroit POD cast. We are on iTunes and Stitcher. Our main theme was produced by Ryan Shepherd. You can find him on Twitter and on SoundCloud at I am Brian Shepherd. IamBrianSheperd. Thanks a lot to him. Check out his stuff. He's been great. He gave us Victory Monday, so go check him out. That's I Am Brian Shepherd. And thank you for everyone who keeps listening and makes us one of the greatest Lions podcasts possible. Y'all are awesome. See you, Starside.